ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। Continuing on the theme of addressing controversies regarding Krishna in the matter of his being Dharmakrit, one or the one who makes Dharma, who acts Dharma in the matter of Krishna being misunderstood. Hare Krishna. Much about Krishna is misunderstood. Krishna will be misunderstood by persons in this material world. The persons in this material world come to this material world to forget Krishna, and they develop a different kind of consciousness. Bhayam dvitiya bhinivishata syat ishada petyasya viparyaya smitihi. One enters the world of fear when one leaves the protection of Krishna. One enters the world of fear when one identifies himself with the body and everything in relation to the body. Deha patyakala tradishu. The body, the children, wife, etc. So one enters the world of fear, of duality, of thinking oneself separate from Krishna. And when one neglects Krishna or rejects Krishna, and one's consciousness becomes opposite to what it should be. So hearing about Krishna's pastimes in the Rasa-lila, which is one of the most controversial and misunderstood pastimes of Krishna, that can't be understood when someone is free from material contamination. Understanding of Krishna, it's not simply by doing a course. One can go to the university and study Krishna, just as one can go to the university and study mathematics or butterflies or any kind of subject. One subject you could study is Krishna. But Krishna is not an object of Krishna is not an object or a subject who can be contained within the tiny framework of our intelligence. It requires purification of consciousness to understand Krishna. Unless one is of pure consciousness, one cannot understand Krishna. Pure consciousness means to become free from envy. Of envy means to identify oneself not as the servant of Krishna. So really, to understand about Krishna and his Rasa-lila and all these things, one really has to begin at the very beginning, as Krishna himself does in his instruction in Bhagavad Gita. He teaches, first of all, that we're not the body. The body is not, as we assume it to be, a vehicle for our enjoyment. We're not the mind. These mundane relationships are all temporary and in that sense illusory. And therefore even the concept of trying to help others by helping them on the bodily or emotional platform is an illusory kind of help. So really we have to understand this at the beginning. We're not the body, then what are we? We are eternal spiritual beings. We are servants of Krishna. When one is freed from the material contamination of identifying with the body, then identifying oneself as I am an eternal servant of Krishna, then he reaches the level of Paramahamsa, and it is possible on that platform for certain spiritually advanced people to understand Krishna's Rasa-lila. Not for everyone. One may be a pure devotee of Krishna and not understand Krishna's pastimes with the gopis, may not even know anything about them. Mother Yashoda doesn't. She's pretty high up there, isn't she? She doesn't know anything about Krishna's Rasalila pastimes. It's meant for devotees in a certain relationship with Krishna. It is Krishna's topmost pastime, although Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur on one pastime said that, well, actually his midday pastimes at Surya Kund, they can be considered topmost. They're not even very well known, as the Rasalila is. But these pastimes can be truly understood and relished by nirmatsaranam satam, pure devotees who are free from any kind of envy or any bad feeling toward Krishna or anyone else. Bad feeling towards others develops from bad feeling toward Krishna, envy of Krishna. So before we even discuss how this controversy is to be addressed, first we should understand there's a qualification to even begin to understand this. Then the question, commonly asked question, which you asked, then why is it that Srila Prabhupada put this in Krishna book? We may say, well, why did Vyasadeva put it in Srimad Bhagavatam? It's a bit of a dilemma. On the one hand, Krishna comes to this world to show his pastimes, to attract the conditioned souls who are trying to be happy in this material world, to attract them to his joyful and blissful pastimes. And what could be more blissful than his Rasalila pastimes? When one is very blissful, then one dances. Dancing, there's formal dancing in which one does so by training or on special occasions. There's also just dancing out of happiness. It's described in the spiritual world, kataganam natyam gamanam. If one is very happy, then instead of speaking, he sings spontaneously. Or if instead of walking, he dances. So in the spiritual world, all talking is like singing. All gait, G-A-I-T, is like dancing. That is an expression of happiness, and the highest happiness is love. And what is actual love? What is the highest love? The highest love is possible with Krishna, who is the perfect person to exchange love with. And Krishna exchanges love he's ready to exchange love with all living beings. When you say Rasalila is the highest, but that's true, but Srila Prabhupada also pointed out many times that Krishna loves the gopis. He also loves the cows. It's not that, well, the cows, they're not, I don't do Rasalila with the cows, they're not on such a high level, but he loves the cow. He loves all the living beings who reciprocate with him. Krishna's pastimes with the cows, they're not so much misunderstood, although hard-nosed empiricists or people who imagine that God, all he can do is sit on a cloud and throw people into hell, that's all, that's his only activity. They cannot imagine that God is a cowherd. They would think, well, that's below his dignity. Yeah, it is. It's below the dignity of God. But then in Krishna's Raja pastimes, he's not much concerned with dignity. He's God throwing off his dignity just to be happy, because that's what he likes to do. And who can say he can't do it? He can do whatever he likes. So these pastimes are mysterious, and although the cowherding pastime doesn't appear to be immoral to persons who are actually immoral in this world by rejecting Krishna's pastimes of the gopis, may appear to be immoral. So the first thing we should understand, that even to begin to understand this, one has to be purified. Oh, then that point, then why is it there in Krishna book? Why has Vyasadeva included it? Because it should be there. It has to be there. On the other hand, there's a very strong tendency to misunderstand it. So that is a paradox, and that is solved to some extent by Parikshit himself in the narration. We find in the Bhagavatam that when Shukadev describes or begins to describe Krishna's pastimes, intimate pastimes with the gopis in the Rasa Lila, then Parikshit, for the benefit of the many saintly persons who are present, also listening to Shukadev, for their benefit and for all generations of future hearers of Bhagavatam, Parikshit asked, how is it that Krishna, who comes to establish dharma, performs what appears to be adharma by dancing with the gopis? And Shukadev answers that, and I'll be going over those answers in this series of lectures, which I probably or may not finish before I leave Ireland. But you can read it yourself in the Krishna book. Also, so you may say, well, why am I talking about it? Well, what else should we talk about? Okay, I read all Prabhupada's books. Okay, now let's talk about Harry Potter. Well, that's also in a book, so you can go and read it yourself also. Then why discuss these things at all? Well, Shrinu Sukadam Shubhadam Bhavasaram. By discussing such topics, we attain auspiciousness and happiness in this otherwise miserable world of birth and death. And by hearing Satang Prasangam Mamavirya Sangvido Bhavanti Hrit Karna Rasayana Kataha Tajoshana Dashvapa Varga Vartnani Shradharatir Bhaktir Anukarna Kramishati. By such discussion of Krishna and his glories in the association of devotees, it is very pleasing to the ear and to the heart, and it's like a tonic for the heart tonic. This is the transcendental heart tonic. If you have, the arteries become congested, then you need to go to a doctor for some treatment, angioplasty or whatever. But this, the heart in the sense of the consciousness, this is a tonic for the consciousness, purification of the consciousness by discussing Krishna in the association of devotees. And by such discussion, one advances on the path of purification by which one can come out of this material existence, and gradually one's faith, taste for hearing about Krishna, and devotion to Krishna all develop by such discussion. So Krishna comes to show his pastimes to the world. It will be misunderstood. And there will be those who criticize. But even those who criticize, they provide a platform for the devotees to establish by philosophical discussion how the critics are wrong. So in this way, even the critics indirectly can serve the cause of Krishna consciousness by discussing it. Even in a wrong way, it gives a platform to the devotees to address that, because those doubts may be in the hearts of others not expressed. And the critics, those who are bold enough to criticize or foolish enough to criticize Krishna, they bring out the doubts that may be in the hearts of others. Just like Parikshit, it said that when the Acharyas comment that when Shukadev started to speak about Krishna's intimate pastimes with the gopis, Parikshit could see on the faces of some of the saintly people who were present some doubts. What's going on? What are we discussing these things for? We're all very moral, dharmic persons, and now you're going to tell us about some young boy dancing with some young girls. They became doubtful. Parikshit saw that, and therefore he questioned Shukdev in this way. So all of this is described in Srimad Bhagavatam. Srila Prabhupada has elaborated on such discussions more in his Krishna book. So Krishna book should be distributed, and people can hear about the blissful activities of Krishna. By Krishna, by exhibiting these, he invites us to come and join him. But those who are very envious, they will misunderstand. And even those who are not very envious, but who are materially contaminated, they may also misunderstand. Because one can only fully understand if one is pure in heart. So therefore the whole subject matter should be discussed. Of who is Krishna? Can be properly understood by Paramahamsas, but one can begin to understand him by from Bhagavad Gita. Krishna says, Aham sarvasya prabhavo matas sarvam pravartate. From me everything comes, I am the source of everything. Iti madva, knowing this, understanding this, or accepting this, bhajante mam, they worship me. Who worships? Buddha bhava samanvita, intelligent people whose hearts are not just intelligence, who have that inclination toward Krishna, the feelings for Krishna. So really, feelings for Krishna, it's required that one associates with devotees so that the feelings for Krishna may arise. Therefore, our devotees... that's another point. In Krishna book, there's so much discussion of so many pastimes of Krishna. And as Srila Prabhupada often pointed out, we don't just concentrate on that. Don't jump only to the pastimes of Rasalila. There's so many pastimes. We should take cognizance of them all. So devotees, they don't go out into the streets with loud hailers and start announcing Krishna is dancing with the gopis. There's no way people are going to understand this just at the beginning. If they read through Krishna book, then they'll come to the gopi section. And by that time, they'll get some idea there's something very special going on here with the descriptions of Krishna's pastimes, along with Srila Prabhupada's philosophical comments interspersed with the delineation of the pastimes. So they may not, they're not so likely to reject that altar. There may be some doubt, just like the rishis at Shuktal, where Shukdev, he spoke Srimad Bhagavatam. They may have some doubt, but then that is to be alleviated by the philosophical discussions, and if they associate with devotees, they will have more insight into this. They can gain insight into it. Devotees, they go out and they chant Hare Krishna, and they distribute prasad, and this way people can become somewhat purified and willing to accept Krishna consciousness. In one purport, in Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita, there's the verse about how the Panchatattva, they flooded the world with love of Krishna. So Srila Prabhupada comments how sometimes in Mayapur there's a great flood and everything is covered And he quotes his own guru's commentary that by the flood of love of God, the seeds of material enjoyment become washed away. So the seed of material enjoyment, the desire to enjoy this material world, is there in everyone, in the heart of every living being in this material world. But as people regularly, again and again and again, see devotees chanting, distributing prasadam, it has a great secret effect on people's consciousness. When the devotees see, when the non-devotees see devotees chanting again and again and again, then it starts to, the purification starts to happen. One of the ways the purification starts to happen is that the non-devotees, their great faith in the project of being happy in this material world, they start to get doubts. Well, who are these Hare Krishna people? They're out there day after day after day. They always look happy, much more happy than me, and they don't do all the things that I do to be happy. And they're talking about Krishna in the spiritual world. Oh no, there might actually be something to it. They start to doubt that real happiness is in the way of life that they, along with all the other 7 billion or so foolish people on this planet, are dedicated to. They start to doubt that and think, maybe there's something real. I want to be happy. They're happy. I'm not. Maybe there's something. Oh, that's the beginning. They start to think, oh, they don't want to think it. But and as they appreciate that happiness, especially if they appreciate that happiness, they wave to the devotees, they think it's something very nice, they don't understand at all why the devotees are doing that. But they, by that little appreciation, Krishna notes, Krishna is pleased. Even they have no idea why they like it. They think they can't imagine any kind of happiness beyond their ideas of sensual or mental happiness, but they appreciate it. This is something nice, this is something good. Then their heart becomes purified. So gradually, all these topics may be explained to them. But really this pastimes, intimate pastimes of Krishna, they're understandable by devotees who are pure in heart, who have become completely purified, so that they are not envious of Krishna. What does this mean, envious of Krishna? Envious of Krishna means, in this material world, we want to enjoy our senses. In spiritual existence means to serve Krishna's senses. Sarvo padhi vinir muktam tatparat vena nirmalam hrishikena hrishikesha sevanang bhakti ruchate. This is the very definition of bhakti. When one is free from material designations, I am Irish, for instance. I am Protestant, for instance. I don't like Catholics, for instance. Just giving it as an example, no political overtones here. Then one identifies oneself with a certain matrix of supposed identity by which one accepts a certain kind of outlook for the sake of trying to enjoy one's senses. When one is free from all such mundane designations, sarvopadi vinir, and takes Krishna to be the object of his service, tatparat vena niramala, and is completely pure in doing so, has no personal motive, then by engaging one's senses in the service of the master of the senses, namely Krishna, then that is called bhakti. So this purification is required, change of consciousness. Otherwise, in this material world, what's going on is atmendriya priti icha, the desire to satisfy one's own senses. But that atmendriya priti vancha tare bale kam krishnendriya priti icha dhare premana. Atmendriya priti vancha, yeah. Anyway, it's the same word. But the desire to satisfy Krishna's transcendental senses is called prema. So one who is pure in heart means has no more desire to enjoy the material world via his senses, via his mind, apart from gross sensual enjoyment, touching, tasting, smelling, feeling, hearing, enjoyable objects of this world. There's also the mental enjoyment of power, wanting to control others, prestige, thinking oneself better than others, perceiving others as enemies and killing them or overcoming them, or one takes happiness in seeing their downfall, and so on. So this is all material. And spiritual desire is the desire to serve Krishna. So the desire to satisfy one's own senses is based on envy of Krishna. One doesn't like to see Krishna happy. Krishna is dancing with so many girls. Oh, what's this? That must be immoral. I can't do it. So he can't do it. He shouldn't do it. Not recognizing Krishna's. Aham hi sarva, his Krishna's position. Aham hi sarva yajnanam bhukta cha pravareva cha. Krishna is the enjoyer and the master of all sacrifices, of everything. So if we fail to recognize that Krishna is the center of all enjoyment, everyone and everything is meant to be enjoyed by Krishna. One who recognizes that and acts on that platform is a true Paramahamsa. Others are envious of Krishna, even great moral persons of this material world, even the great yogis who renounce this world and don't want to enjoy their senses because they are. Why don't they want to enjoy their senses? Because they see that is the cause of distress. They rightly perceive that that is the cause of distress. But unless they accept that we are to serve Krishna, then they're also acting on a platform of sense gratification. Not gross sense gratification, but it's me in the center. My liberation from material existence. But pure devotees are not even interested in liberation from material existence. They only want to serve Krishna. Here or there or anywhere. That is the platform of pure devotion. Paramahamsa. So all these points should be understood. Of course, we may not discuss so many things if someone comes up and challenges, why is this Krishna dancing, blah, 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 blah. But we, at least for our own understanding, we should understand that Krishna's pastimes with the gopis, and they're all good, there's nothing bad, they're fully transcendental. In fact, it is the highest expression of goodness and morality. So, regarding qualification to know or to understand or enter into Krishna's Rasleela pastimes, there are a few quotes from Srila Prabhupada. Here's part of a paragraph from Teachings of Lord Chaitanya, chapter 23. Unscrupulous persons go at once to the 10th canto, especially to the 5 chapters in which Srila Vyasadeva has kindly described the Lord's rasa dance. However, this portion of Srimad Bhagavatam is the most confidential part of that great literature. Unless one is thoroughly accomplished in the transcendental knowledge of the Lord, one is sure to misunderstand the Lord's worshipable transcendental pastimes in the rasa dance and his loving dealings with the gopis. So one has to be thoroughly accomplished in the transcendental knowledge of the Lord. One has to fully understand. Janma karma cha me divyam evang yo veti tatvataha. One has to fully understand Krishna's transcendental position. This subject, transcendental position, and there are so many aspects of the transcendental knowledge of Krishna. It's called Bhagavat Tattva Vijnanam, science of the subject of God. So, Srila Prabhupada continues, this subject matter is highly spiritual and technical, and only liberated personalities who have gradually attained the stage of Paramahamsa can transcendentally worship, transcendentally relish the worshipable rasa dance. Another quote, this is from Krishna book, description of the rasa dance. Shukadeva Goswami has used the word Shraddhanvita for one who is trained in spiritual life. Shraddha, or faith, is the beginning. One who has developed his faith in Krishna as the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the Supreme Spirit Soul, can both describe and hear the rasa lila. So in this quote, Srila Prabhupada says that even in the beginning, if one has faith, one can begin to describe and hear the rasa lila. But again, Srila Prabhupada cautioned about only concentrating on that as if there's a... We have to understand fully. One should be cognizant of this. It's not that we don't talk about these things at all. In one letter, Srila Prabhupada addressed this. It seemed that someone had... one disciple of Srila Prabhupada had asked him that, well, should we not talk about the gopis? And Srila Prabhupada said, well, no, we're not banning the gopis. It's not that we don't discuss these things. We should know what is our ultimate goal, what Chaitanya Mahaprabhu came to give. But at the same time, we should progress cautiously, as Chaitanya Mahaprabhu also instructed us to do so. Another quote, this is from Srila Prabhupada's purport to Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita, Madhyalila, chapter 14, text 158. One has to be transcendentally realized before even considering relishing the pastimes of Krishna with the gopis. One who is on the mundane platform must first purify himself by following the regulative principles. Only then can he try to understand Krishna and the gopis. So I just said that Chaitanya Mahaprabhu has also told us to take it gradually, step by step. So this is the step by step that Chaitanya Mahaprabhu has given. First, one must purify himself by following the regulative principles. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu instructed Sanatana Goswami to explain the details of devotional service, which Sanatana Goswami eventually did, with the great help of Srila Gopal Bhatta Goswami in compiling the Hari Bhakti Vilasa. And that follows the subjects given by Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, including cleaning the teeth. That's Chaitanya Mahaprabhu describes the activities of devotees, including cleaning the teeth. Now, you may think, well, that doesn't sound very transcendental. It's not, unless it's done in devotional service. But it is also part of devotional service if done within the broader framework of devotional service. It's not that one thing, okay, so Chaitanya Mahaprabhu says to clean his teeth, so I'll go on. Let's, just like we have a kirtan mela, we do 24-hour non-stop kirtan, we'll do 24-hour cleaning our teeth. But Chaitanya Mahaprabhu doesn't say, dantad, what is that? Dantadavaniya, sada. He doesn't say always, the teeth should always be cleaned. He says kirtaniya sada, and hari, the kirtan, glorifying hari, Krishna, that should go on. So, the subject matter of devotional service is Krishna, but there are regulative principles to be followed, even for maintaining the body in Krishna consciousness. So here's a quote from a lecture that Srila Prabhupada gave on January the 3rd in 1971. According to Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's instruction, we follow that. This Rasa-lila chapter is not for ordinary persons. It's interesting that Srila Prabhupada said this in Surat, which is the place in the whole world, in India, which means in the whole world, where Srila Prabhupada is best received. When I say in India, therefore in the whole world, because there, in outside of India, there, apart from Indians overseas, there wasn't much appreciation of Srila Prabhupada's activities. There was devotionally inclined people in India appreciated Srila Prabhupada's activities, and some Hindu-minded people, they thought, oh, now our Hindu culture is going overseas. But because in Surat, up to the present day, there are many, many people who are practically the most of the people who are inclined toward bhakti, and throughout the year in Surat there'll be some kind of talk on Srimad Bhagavatam going on, Bhagavat Saptaha, or some drama of Krishna Leela. There's always, throughout the year, there's some religious social religious satsang is going on. So Srila Prabhupada is very well received there, but also because in the popular culture of bhakti, of Krishna bhakti, that is widespread in India, that is not regulated by the transcendental knowledge that of the acharyas, then people, they tend to want to hear Krishna's pastimes, and they take it that they're qualified to do so. But Srila Prabhupada warned that this Rasa-lila chapter is not for ordinary persons. Even, we may say, well, those who like to hear about Krishna, they're not ordinary persons, but there are various warnings. Anushrunuyat, that's from that Shadhanvita verse. One should hear in disciplic succession. Satang prasangam namavya. One should hear in association of devotees. So Srila Prabhupada, speaking in Surat, warned that according to Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's instruction, this Rasa-lila is not for ordinary persons. They, the pastimes, are meant for liberated persons, not for ordinary persons. Therefore, they should not be, this Rasa-lila description should not be made amongst ordinary people. And they say, well, who will want to hear? Whoever wants to hear is not an ordinary person. But by ordinary person, of course, Srila Prabhupada is very appreciative of his reception in Surat. But at the same time, people, they're devotees of Krishna, but they're absorbed in materialistic activities also. And as it happens, Surat is one of the most wealthy cities in India. It's a great center of business, with crores of rupees, millions of dollars of business being negotiated every day. So people are also, they're devotees of Krishna, but they're also, they're not unconcerned with making money. So Srila Prabhupada goes on, those who are advanced devotees, those who are liberated from material contamination, they should try to understand what is Rasa-lila. That is described in Srimad Bhagavatam, and one should not even imagine the Rasa-lila of Krishna, but it is meant when one is advanced in Krishna consciousness. It is for them only. Therefore, before one even thinks to try to judge Krishna as being immoral or whatever, even to think like that is not a good idea, but one should understand that who he is. He is this supreme truth. In English there's the term the absolute truth, and that Krishna is the highest truth is established in the very first verse of Srimad Bhagavatam. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. I meditate upon that spiritual personage, I meditate with submission, transcendental. The word Om establishes. This is Om means the supreme reality, transcendent reality. Namaha, I bow down to Bhagavate, unto the personality of Godhead, Vasudev, Krishna, Satyam Parandhimi. I meditate on He who is the supreme Satya, the supreme truth. And at the beginning, or near the beginning of the Bhagavatam, 10th canto, in which the delightful pastimes of Krishna are described, we find that the demigods prayed to Krishna, who was present in the womb of Devaki before Krishna's appearance. They prayed to him similarly as the supreme truth in a verse in which they describe him. Satya, you'll hear the word Satya, truth, again and again, describing Krishna. Satya vratang, satya parang, tri satyang, satyasya yoning, hitang cha satye, satyasya satyam rita, satya netram, satyatmakam, twang, sharanang, prapannaha. Srila Prabhupada translates this. The demigods prayed, O Lord, this is satyavrata, you never deviate from your vow, which is always perfect, because whatever you decide is perfectly correct and cannot be stopped by anyone. Then, Satya Param, he's the supreme truth, and Tri Satyam, being present, Srila Prabhupada in one sentence describes these two statements, Satya Param, Tri Satyam. Tri Satyam means three Satyam, so it means in three phases of time. He's the supreme truth in the past and present and will continue to be in the future. Srila Prabhupada translates this, being present in the three phases of cosmic manifestation, creation, maintenance, and annihilation, you are the supreme truth. Satyasya Satyam, he is the truth of the truthful. What many people consider to be the truth is not the truth, because they themselves are not truthful. If one takes falsity to be truth, then his so-called truth is not truth at all. At one time, there are so many things. People consider to be true what is not true. At one time, it was considered that substances that burn, they must have an element within them called phlogiston. And when that comes out and is burned, but then later that was discovered, well, that's not true. But prior to discovering that, among educated, scientifically minded people, it was the truth of the existence of phlogiston was apparent every time they saw something burning. But it turned out it wasn't true. So, by further research. So, the truth of those who are true, those who know the truth know that Krishna is truthful. Those who are truthful in accepting that I'm a tiny living being, I am the servant of the Supreme, Krishna can be manifested to them. So, as reading Srila Prabhupada's translation of this, Satyasya Satyam, indeed, unless one is completely truthful, one cannot achieve your faithful favor, which therefore cannot be achieved by hypocrites. Then the next, Rita Satya Netram. You are the active principle, the real truth in all the ingredients of creation, and therefore you are known as Antaryami, the inner force. Here Srila Prabhupada is intertwining with, in his translation, as he often does, comments from the acharyas to explain the words of the verse. Satyatmakam, he is the inner, indweller, antaryami, indweller, He is the true indweller within everyone's heart. You are equal to everyone, and your instructions apply for everyone for all time. You are the beginning of all truth. Therefore, offering our obeisances, we surrender unto you. Kindly give us protection. Srila Prabhupada's purport, I'm not going to read that now, but I'm going to read Srila Prabhupada's commentary on this, given in prose in the Krishna book, on this same verse. So from the Krishna book, prayers by the demigods for Lord Krishna in the womb, Srila Prabhupada writes, Then the demigods address the Lord as Satyam Parang, or the Supreme Absolute Truth. Everyone is searching after the truth. That is the philosophical way of life. The demigods give information that the Supreme Absolute Truth is Krishna. One who becomes fully Krishna conscious can attain the Absolute Truth. Krishna is the Absolute Truth because, unlike relative truth, he is truth in all the three phases of eternal time. Time is divided into past, present, and future. Krishna is truth always, past, present, and future. In the material world, everything is being controlled by supreme time in the course of past, present, and future. But before the creation, Krishna was existing. And when there is creation, everything is resting in Krishna. And when this creation is finished, Krishna will remain. Therefore, he is the absolute truth in all circumstances. If there is any truth within this material world, it emanates from the supreme truth, Krishna. These are profoundly philosophical statements. If there is any truth within this material world, is there any truth? Well, it's not totally untrue. There's some kind of truth, but that truth, because it rests in the supreme truth, the absolute truth, Krishna. If there is any opulence within this material world, the cause of the opulence is Krishna. If there is any reputation within this material world, the cause of the reputation is Krishna. If there is any strength within this material world, the cause of such strength is Krishna. If there is any wisdom and education within this material world, the cause of such wisdom and education is Krishna. Therefore, Krishna is the source of all relative truths, which is another way of translating satyatmakam. He is the essence of everything that which is true. So all of these names, Satyavrata, Satyam Param, Trisatya, Satyatmakam, all these names could be examined in great detail, but I won't go into that just now. Also in the Rasa Dance introduction, that chapter in chapter 29 of Krishna book, Srila Prabhupada goes in great depth to establish the supreme master is Krishna. Of course, he's done this again and again and again in his writings and in his talks. He goes to great, lengthy paragraph explaining Krishna is the supreme controller. We cannot say there is no controller. That is a great mistake of, one of the great mistakes of all so-called philosophers, atheistic philosophers. They do not recognize that there is a supreme controller, and that supreme controller is Krishna. So, getting to the essence of this criticism of Krishna, that Krishna dances with young girls in the dead of night. He sports with the gopis who are others' wives. This is immoral. This is not dharma. So, getting to the essence of that topic, having discussed actually what is the qualification to even begin to understand these topics, one point which completely invalidates all such objections is that when Krishna sports with the gopis, He's playing with himself because everything is an expansion of Krishna. As Srila Prabhupada states in Krishna Book Chapter 33, description of the Rasa dance. As stated in the Brahma Sanghita, all these gopis are expansions of Krishna's pleasure potency. Ananda chinmaya rasa pratibhavita bhista bhirya eva nijarupa teya kalabihi. It's described that the gopis, they're expansions of Krishna's ananda chinmaya rasa, or his chit shakti, hladini shakti, his potencies of existence and of pleasure. So, going on, Srila Prabhupada writes, touching their bodies with his hands and looking at their pleasing eyes, Krishna enjoyed the gopis exactly as a child enjoys playing with the reflection of his body in a mirror. So, they're all Krishna's. They're all Krishna's potencies. And there is eternal confidence. The idea that the wives of someone else, that is illusory. As Srila Prabhupada once pointed out, someone may criticize Krishna for dancing with someone else's wives. But if you think, this is my wife, then you are immoral because the wife doesn't belong to you. She's also a servant of Krishna. If one sees one's wife primarily as my wife, of course, conventionally, that must be done. But primarily, one should see, if one is to see with actual understanding, that I, as a living being, am a servant of Krishna, and so is that living being, so are all other living beings, and the one I call my wife, and who I conventionally interact with as my wife, is actually a servant of Krishna. So, to even think that there can be someone else who has a claim over anyone, that the claim that surpasses that of Krishna's, that is immoral. So the so-called moralists, they are immoral. They think Krishna is immoral by having so many wives. But you are immoral by thinking I have one wife. If one doesn't see that husband-wife relationship is meant for serving Krishna together. Another point is that Krishna... Anyway, I'll just read it. It'll become clear from the same chapter. Description of the Rasa Dance, Krishna Book, Chapter 33. Another word used here is apta kama. Some may take it for granted that Krishna was very lusty among young girls, but Parikshit Maharaj said that this was not possible. He could not be lusty. Apta kama means that the Supreme Personality of Godhead is self-satisfied. Even if he were lusty, he doesn't need to take help from others to satisfy his lusty desires. The next point is that although not lusty, he doesn't need to, even if you say Krishna has got desire, which is true, in one sense, although he's Atma Rama, he's fully satisfied in himself, but Eko Bahu Syam, the one becomes many, to expand the bliss. Bliss is the nature of Brahman. Anandamayo Bhasat. The supreme Brahman is full of bliss. So to expand that bliss, he expands himself into many forms, who are simply expansions of himself. So he can please himself by himself. And in fact, he does that in one sense when he expands himself as other living beings too, for sharing and thus increasing transcendental bliss. Then, continuing from Srila Prabhupada's Krishna book, the next point, Srila Prabhupada writes, is that although not lusty himself, he might have been seduced by the lusty desire of the gopis. But Maharaj Parikshit then used another word, Yadupati, which indicates that Krishna is the most exalted personality in the dynasty of the Yadus. The kings in the dynasty of Yadu were considered to be the most pious, and their descendants were also like that. Having taken birth in that family, how could Krishna have been seduced even by the gopis? So the point is there that he comes in a line of very pious kings, and all these pious kings, they're above such low-class behavior as illicit sexual activity. And Krishna is considered the best of all the descendants of Yadu. So where's the question? There's no question of Krishna being on the platform of some low-class, lusty person. Another point, Krishna relishes himself exactly his own internal spiritual energies. He and his energies are non-different. So Krishna, he relishes his spiritual energy. He cannot be attracted by the material energy. There's no question of Krishna being attracted to the material energy. By criticizing Krishna for being immoral, the idea is that, well, Krishna is just some low-class person who is attracted to the same kind of thing as me. Someone who accuses Krishna of being immoral, he also has the desire to enjoy this material world, but even though he has so many gross desires, he keeps them in check and only enjoys in a regulated way. And in this way, he is moral. And he thinks that Krishna doesn't keep his desires in check, he just indulges in all bad things. But Krishna doesn't come down to the low platform of this material world. He doesn't have any material desires, but he has desire, spiritual desire. Krishna's not interested in Miss World or Miss Universe, or who's supposed to be the most beautiful woman in the world these days? Who's some great film actor? Hollywood, anyone know, any idea? Bollywood, who's the big?
Aishwarya Rai.
Aishwarya Rai's old now, she's gone. You're out of date. I mean, she's still probably beautiful, but not that much, because she must be over 40, but isn't it? Okay, you're in touch with Bollywood? Who's the big beautiful woman there now? Priyanka Chopra. Yeah, I must admit, I've heard her name. How do I know? Well, it's if you live in India as I do, then you see the newspapers and the name comes up. Okay, so she's the biggest right now. And how many have you seen? When I first came to India, Rekha was big. You must have heard of her, but she must be 70 or something now, I don't know, 67. Not beautiful anymore, as I often joke in India. What happened to Rekha? She got too much Rekha on her face. Rekha means lime. So Priyanka Chopra's the most beautiful, but Krishna's not interested in Priyanka Chopra in the way that millions of Indians are interested in her. In a lusty way. He's interested in her, he wants to save her soul, but he's not interested in enjoying what is, as Rukmini Devi says, as recorded in the Srimad Bhagavatam, about a woman who's interested in a man, and it applies the other way also. Any woman who's interested in, who thinks, my husband, and he thinks, what is that? It's a bag of mucus, bile, blood, organs, all encased in a bag with some mustaches on the outside, and she thinks, this is my husband. And so the other way, what Priyanka Chopra or any other beautiful woman, I presume Priyanka Chopra is beautiful, otherwise she wouldn't be famous as a Bollywood nayika or heroine. So it's the same thing. It's just, there are some differences, not exactly the same. It's well-formed breasts, lips, legs. But if you just, as the saying goes, beauty is skin deep. If you remove the skin and have a profile of any beautiful woman minus the skin, unless you're used to such things, you're a surgeon or something like that, you probably vomit. It's disgusting. So Krishna is not attracted to blood, bones, mucus, bile in a bag of skin. If you hear of skin separated from the body, it sounds horrible. We've heard that the Nazis in overseeing the execution camps of Jews and others, they would make wallets and such things from human skin. If you hear that, there's some... Who would like for their birthday present a wallet made of human skin? Any takers? Anyone? No, it's horrible to hear. But the same skin, when it's attached to the body, sounds or gives the impression of being something very relishable. So Krishna, he's not interested in the blood bones bag enjoyment. Krishna is never attracted by what is his material energy. Krishna is very interested in Priyanka Chopra, but no more interested than he is in any other jiva. He sees her as a bewildered soul in this material world. We hope she gets some benefit. She's probably visited the ISKCON center in Juhu. Most people in Bombay, especially from the higher classes, have been at some time, I would think. So, regarding this, Srila Prabhupada writes in his purport to chapter 7, verse number 6 of canto 2 of the Srimad Bhagavatam, regarding Nara Narayan Rishi, who you may remember performing austerities, and Indra, as usual, gets disturbed. Oh no, they're going to knock me off the Indra post. I'd better send some beautiful girls to break their austerities. And so some beautiful girls went with Cupid, Kamadev with his bow, and Naranayan Rishi looked at them and said, oh, yeah, beautiful girls. You like beautiful girls? Okay. And they manifested some beautiful girls, much more beautiful than the ones which Indra had sent, and said, you like beautiful girls? Okay, choose one. You can take whatever you like. So he defeated Cupid and Indra in this way. So Srila Prabhupada writes in this regard, the demigods, being envious of the austere life of the rigid brahmacharis, would try to cause them to break their vows by dispatching soldiers of Cupid. Soldiers of Cupid is a female army. And the bow of Cupid is flower arrows. How nice! And you're dead, spiritually dead. But in the case of the Lord, it became an unsuccessful attempt when the celestial beauties saw that the Lord can produce innumerable such beauties by his mystic internal potency, and that there was consequently no need to be attracted by others externally. There is a common proverb that a confectioner is never attracted by sweetmeats. The confectioner, who is always manufacturing sweetmeats, has very little desire to eat them. Similarly, the Lord, by his pleasure potential powers, can produce innumerable spiritual beauties and not be the least attracted by the false beauties of material creation. One who does not know alleges foolishly that Lord Krishna enjoyed women in his Rasalila in Vrindavan or with his 16,000 married wives at Dwaraka. And going back to that description of the Rasa dance chapter, Srila Prabhupada writes in this regard, another important point is that none of the gopis who danced with Krishna were in their material bodies. They dance with Krishna in their spiritual bodies. They are all spirit. Their bodies are all spirit. All their husbands thought that their wives were sleeping by their sides. The so-called husbands of the gopis were already enamored with the influence of the external energy of Krishna, so by dint of this very energy they could not understand that their wives had gone to dance with Krishna. What then is the basis of accusing Krishna of dancing with other wives? The bodies of the gopis, which were their husbands, were lying in bed. There was a material, the acharyas described this, that there was a material facsimile of the gopis' bodies, who the husbands of the gopis thought were their wives, but the spiritual parts and parcels of Krishna were dancing with him. Krishna is the Supreme Person, the whole spirit, and he danced with the spiritual bodies of the gopis. There is therefore no reason to accuse Krishna in any way. Back to Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita, Madhya Lila, chapter 14, text 158, purport. The gopis are all transcendental spirit souls. One should never think that the gopis and Krishna have material bodies. Vrindavan Dham is also a spiritual abode. And there the days and nights, the trees, flowers and water and everything else are spiritual. There is not even a trace of material contamination. Krishna, who is the supreme Brahman and Supersoul, is not at all interested in anything material. His activities with the gopis are all spiritual and take place within the spiritual world. They have nothing to do with the material world. Lord Krishna's lusty desires and all his dealings with the gopis are on the spiritual platform. I'm not going to finish this. There, 28 pages on page 6. The 28 pages of these quotes, this is a sampling of quotes from Srila Prabhupada on these topics. That's obviously very, very important topics. So the basic point to be understood is that Lord Krishna is the Purusha, the supreme enjoyer, the supreme male, whereas all others are Prakriti. So he is actually the husband and the lord of all living beings. As Srila Prabhupada writes in Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 5, Chapter 18, Text 19, in the prayers of Lakshmi Devi, Rama. Now the name of her is Rama. That's why we shouldn't chant Hare Rama, Hare Rama. Sometimes we hear devotees chanting Hare Rama, but it's Hare Rama, not Rama. And then it becomes something different. I'll just read this. In this verse, Lakshmi Devi Rama shows compassion toward women who worship the Lord for the benediction of possessing a good husband. Although such women desire to be happy with children, wealth, a long duration of life, and everything dear to them, they cannot possibly do so. In the material world, a so-called husband is dependent on the control of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. There are many examples of a woman whose husband, being dependent on the result of his own fruitive actions, cannot maintain his wife, her children, her wealth, or her duration of life. Therefore, factually, the only real husband of all women is Krishna, the supreme husband. Okay, women, don't go for a divorce. You're already the wife of Krishna. And in this world, you have to have a husband also. Because the gopis were liberated souls, they understood this fact. Therefore, they rejected their material husbands and accepted Krishna as their real husband. Krishna is the real husband, not only of the gopis, but of every living entity. Everyone should perfectly understand that Krishna is the real husband of all living entities who are described in the Bhagavad Gita as Prakriti, female, not Purusha, male. In Bhagavad Gita, only Krishna is addressed as Purush, Param Brahma, Param Dhamma, Pavitrang, Paramang Bhavam, Purushang, Shashvatam, Divyam, Adi Devam, Ajang Vibhum. Arjuna said to Krishna, "You are the supreme Brahman, the ultimate, the supreme abode and purifier, the absolute truth and the eternal divine person. You are the primal God, transcendental and original, and you are the unborn and all-pervading beauty." Krishna is the original Purush, and the living entities are Prakriti. Thus, Krishna is the enjoyer, and all living entities are meant to be enjoyed by him. Therefore, any woman who seeks a material husband for her protection, or any man who desires to become the husband of a woman, is under illusion. To become a husband means to maintain a wife and children nicely by supplying wealth and security. However, A material husband cannot possibly do this, for he is dependent on his karma. Karmana daivani treena. His circumstances are determined by his past fruitive activities. Therefore, if one proudly thinks that he can protect his wife, he is under illusion. Krishna is the only husband, and therefore the relationship between a husband and wife in this material world cannot be absolute. Because we have the desire to marry, Krishna mercifully allows the so-called husband to possess a wife, and the wife to possess a so-called husband, for mutual satisfaction. In the Isha Upanishad it is said, Tena Tyaktena Bhunjita, the Lord provides everyone with his quota. Actually, however, every living entity is Prakriti or female, and Krishna is the only husband. Ekale Ishvara Krishna Asabhritya Jare Joiche Nachai Toiche Kore Nritya. Krishna is the original master or husband of everyone, and all other living entities, having taken the form of so-called husbands or wives, are dancing according to his desire. A so-called husband may unite with his wife for sense gratification, but his senses are conducted by Hrishikesha, the master of the senses, who is therefore the actual husband. It's almost 8:30. I should finish. Some devotees have to go some distance, I guess. So, all right, Hare Krishna, I'll finish there. All glories to His Divine Grace, Srila Prabhupada.